Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You know, I think there's a little bit of that expat culture. When you're living abroad, you tend to become friends with the community and the people around you. And my mother was, and still is, always one of those people that loves to make friends with the neighbors. And even if she doesn't speak the language, she tries and tries to learn how to communicate as best she can. She finds a way. And sometimes the best way is through food.
Welcome to Your Mama's Kitchen, the podcast that explores how the kitchens we grew up in as kids shape who we become as adults. I'm Michelle Norris. Today, we're joined by journalist and TV news personality, Natalie Morales. You might have seen her on your television screens as the co-host of the daytime Emmy Award-winning show, The Talk, on CBS. But even before this gig, Natalie had a robust career as a TV journalist, serving over two decades on NBC News, making appearances on Dateline and the Nightly News, and anchoring The Today Show. What you might not have known about Natalie is that she is a fantastic cook. She has her own cookbook, Cooking at Home with Natalie Morales, where she shares recipes for healthy meals that she cooks up at home as a mother of two. The thing that is unique about her recipes is that she draws from the cultural experiences of her globe-trotting childhood. As a kid in a military family, she was born in Taiwan, and throughout her childhood, she lived in Brazil, Panama, and Spain. Natalie even experienced a medley of cultures inside her family home with her Puerto Rican father and her Brazilian mother. Natalie blended all these backgrounds into her cookbook and, more essentially, into who she is as a person today. We'll hear about how her diverse upbringing shaped her worldview and her views of the role of the kitchen. Plus, Natalie gives us some tips on how to make her favorite dessert a perfectly delicate flan. So good. All of that's coming up. Natalie Morales, thanks for coming in to talk to us. I'm so glad that we could do this in person.
Me too. It's so great to finally sit across from the great Michelle.
Oh, stop. We're just two girls who tell stories, right?
We do. But you tell some of the best stories.
Well, I get to tell some great stories because I ask people to go down memory lane.
Yes.
And tell us about the kitchens that influenced their lives, the people that influenced their lives, and how those spaces still live in them. Mm-hmm. And you have had such an interesting background. You have traveled all over the world. You were born in Taiwan. You lived in Spain for a time. You are a multilingual. You speak
Portuguese
and Spanish. And you are fluid in terms of your culinary skills also. You publish a cookbook, and the cookbook seems to sop all of that up.
Yes.
All those influences up. So I want to begin where we always begin. Tell me about your mama's kitchen. And where do you go in your mind when I ask about that?
Yeah.
Which country, which locale does your mind go to?
I think given that my dad was in the Air Force, and so every 2 to 3 years we would move pretty much on the regular. But my most formative years were Madrid, Spain, when I was 12 to 17. So when you ask me, where do you go in your mind? That's the kitchen I think of, our kitchen in Madrid, Spain. And that is really where I formed my culinary tastes, where I picked up the Mediterranean way of living and eating, but then also being able to travel. We were very fortunate to be able to pick up and go. When you live in Europe, it's easy to hop a train or take a flight. And we traveled quite a bit. And my dad, that's his still, it's his wanderlust. You know, he travels as often as he can. And my mom tags along with him still, begrudgingly sometimes. You know, she has grandkids she'd rather stay home with. But that's the kitchen I always like to think back to.
That sounds pretty fabulous. Now tell me about your father was in the military. What led the family to Madrid? And were you in military housing or were you living in civilian housing?
No, we were living in civilian housing. My dad at the time had the equivalent of what was sort of a diplomatic job. And he was working with a group that was a bunch of different, what they called joint U.S. military groups, and based in downtown Madrid. And we lived off base and lived like teenagers living in the middle of Madrid. And I was able to go to the American School in Madrid, but it really was an international school. Mm-hmm. It was incredible because a lot of my friends were Spanish speakers, Italian speakers. So I feel like I get a lot of that cultural influence just by being around all these different kinds of cultures and friends with different backgrounds.
So high school was like the UN.
It was a little bit, yeah.
So if I'm imagining that kitchen in Madrid, am I correct in thinking that there was probably a lot of tile?
There's tile everywhere.
Describe it for me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There were windows that you could see out into a courtyard because a lot of Spanish homes, they're not big homes. These were really townhomes close together, but everything is surrounding, you know, a little courtyard in the middle. And so we could look out on the courtyard. The kitchen door would open up to the courtyard. And so I just remember my sisters and my mom. You know, I have two sisters. I'm the middle. So we would always...
So there's a whole conversation about that. We'll save that for later.
Yeah, we would always make meals, all of us cooking and being around. It was a pretty small kitchen. You know, there was not a lot of real estate.
European kitchens.
Yeah, and you don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. You spend a lot of time in the dining room or other areas. It's different than it is here in the United States where... When you have guests over, you spend all your time in the kitchen. You know, you try to get everybody outside of the kitchen, but people tend to stay in the kitchen. Over there, it was more, let's go sit at the living room and the dining room and hang out outside. So,
your mother's name is Penelope.
Yes.
Was she a good cook? And was she trying to make sure that even though you were living in distant lands, that you were holding on to American traditions as well?
My mother is Brazilian and my father's Puerto Rican. But because as a military housewife, she moved around so much, she, I think, picked up a lot of different culinary habits and cuisines. And I think that was also part of her love of wanting to assimilate and be a part of whatever culture she was living in. For example, when I was born in Taiwan and when my mom moved there with my father, my dad was stationed in Vietnam at the time, but they were able to go there to Taiwan. And my mom, to this day, says it was one of her favorite places to live. The people are so kind, beautiful culture, wonderful, sweet people. And she learned to cook a lot of Chinese food at the time and Taiwanese, different kinds of Taiwanese delicacies. And so wherever she went, she tried to pick up something. And so to this day, she still does that. But of course, being Brazilian, there's a lot of South American cuisine. We all, my sisters and I, we love our empanadas, we love our feijoada, we love our croquetas, all the South American Latin foods. But also my grandmothers had a strong influence in our cooking as well, like my Puerto Rican grandmother. So there's a lot of arroz con gandules and ropa vieja, and more of the Latin side that my mother makes as well. So again, it's wanting to blend in. That's my mother's way of, as a military housewife, wanting to assimilate and fit in and be a part of that culture.
Was that common among the military housewives? Because one of the things that I've learned, I don't come from a military family. My father was in the military, but had long left by the time he had me and my sisters, that there's a high level of expectation around entertaining and military families, especially if one of the spouses is sort of moving up through the ranks.
Yeah.
Were other families doing that, or was your mother a little bit unusual in that she was cooking the food of a culture that surrounded her?
You know, I think there's a little bit of that expat culture. When you're living abroad, you tend to become friends with the community and the people around you. And my mother was, and still is, always one of those people that loves to make friends with the neighbors. And even if she doesn't speak the language, she tries and tries to learn how to communicate as best she can. She finds a way. And sometimes the best way is through food. And she loves to learn, whether it's arts and crafts or teach me a recipe. And that was something, living in Spain, for example, our neighbor made incredible gazpacho. And she invited her into our kitchen and said, show me how you make your gazpacho. I need to learn how to make this. And it's in my cookbook. It's one of the easiest recipes there is. And so there was always, you know, I think that connection that is formed around the table, I think it's the greatest way to communicate with people. It's, as I say, when you break bread, you break so much more mm-hmm. with somebody else. You're essentially almost holding hands with people across the table.
I'm going to ask a sensitive question, mm-hmm. but it's something that is common among military families. They have to make their dollar go a little bit farther.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the pay structure within the military. How did that play out in your kitchen?
A lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My dad was the breadwinner and he rose to the ranks as a lieutenant colonel, but my dad is still very savvy when it came to putting away his money and investing and was very good about that. But
he was a saver.
He stretched that dollar. Let me tell you, it was painful for us. Those of us, you know, wanting nice clothes and having three girls wanting to dress like our friends, we didn't have that. It was more, I shopped the thrift stores and learned how to put outfits together, which to this day, people are always like, oh, you have such a great sense of style. And I kind of credit that with being able to go to a thrift store and being able to put something together, you know, on pretty much $5.
Mm-hmm. And that's
because
what,
that's
what
we
you
did.
Were doing
but,
at that time.
But my mother, yes. And my mother still to this day lives on a budget. My dad gives her a certain amount and this is for the groceries, this is for the house, this is for the spending. And he was able to retire early though. And that goes to show you that he knew what he was doing. The rest of us could have learned a thing or two from him.
How did that play out when you were outside of the house? Did that mean that you didn't take as many family adventures, that you figured out how to do things and,
no, you
and
know,
still
we were never,
save money?
You know, we were never for the lack of, you know, it's not like we missed out on anything. In fact, we traveled more, I would say, than most people, but that was, you know, we would take MAC flights for $10. I don't know if...
What's a MAC flight?
A MAC flight is a military airlift command flight.
Okay, so, like I wouldn't know that.
So living...
Is there an airline I don't know about called MAC
exactly.
Airlines?
Okay. This is the best thing ever. When you're in the military, your dependents can travel with you for $10. So this is what we how we would travel throughout Europe. Instead of hopping an American Airlines flight on the weekends, my dad would be like, let's go see what if we can hop a flight to Germany. And if there happened to be an aircraft going to Germany, we would get on the parachute seats and they were actual like
oh,
the
so you
sheets
sit the, on the side of the
on
plane.
On the side of the plane. And they had like little box lunches with the whoopie pies and the whatever cold fried chicken inside. And that's all you got. But it was so much fun as a kid. It was the greatest experience. And we traveled all over the world doing that. And, you know, for that, I was so lucky. I don't think I missed out on anything. That's the greatest gift I think my parents could give me is that military upbringing and that lifestyle. It really opened my eyes to the world and it informed me at such a young age that the world is a much bigger place and there are people out there that you need to know and you need to be able to meet them and see them and tell their stories. And that's why I became a journalist.
And when you became a journalist, because you were moving constantly every couple of years, setting up house in a new place, setting up in a new school, meeting new people, always the new kid, mm-hmm. does that help you as a journalist and as a storyteller?
I think you know the answer to that. I mean, you basically have to assimilate wherever you go. And you also have to be able to think quickly on your feet. You have to adjust quickly. If somebody says, I'm sorry, we can't do the interview right now, are you going to have to do it over there? You have to be able to go with the flow. And that was my whole upbringing was going with the flow. I have a professional degree in going with the flow. Being able to just pack a bag and go. I mean, that's...
How much notice would you get when the family was moving?
You know, they would tell us like, it was always, I would say like January or February, my father would say, oh, they're thinking about moving us to, what do you all think? And it was like, okay. And the only time where there was a what was when it was between my junior and senior year. We got moved from Madrid, Spain to Dover, Delaware, and we did it. My dad had two options. He was getting ready to retire. And one of the options was, I have to go back to Delaware, or, and this was during the Gulf War, and he was helping with that mission to help in that. He's like, or the other option is I go lead this base in Rota, Spain, and I can't bring the family. You would have to go to boarding school and finish your school somewhere else anyway. And I didn't want to be away from my family. So yeah, it was hard, but you know what? Again, you learn to survive and sacrifice. And I think anybody who's grown up in the military knows we're stronger for it in the end.
Yeah. So you parachuted into a high school in Dover, Delaware, in your senior year.
Yes.
What was that
from
like?
Madrid. It was a culture shock. Yes. I mean, I actually...
What was most shocking?
You know, I think I had lived in Delaware before. I lived there when I was in fourth to sixth grade. So in my head, I was very happy and very comfortable to go back to the States. The idea of going back home sounded amazing. Friday night lights, football games, cheerleaders. What I didn't realize was here I am in the middle of applying to colleges and where I was in that process and moving and how difficult that would be in that process and explaining all of that. But at the same time, picking up my life and making new friends, having to carry on and starting over at the same time, picking up where I left off, but trying to, again, forge new friendships at such a crucial time in my life where I'm supposed to be looking ahead to college. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, you know, I could have been the valedictorian of my senior class. Instead, I have to start over. They don't know where to put me. So it was all learning as I went.
Coming up, how Natalie Morales figures out how to serve up food that is healthy and delicious. It's not always easy. I first gave AG1 a try because members of my family were using it. My husband uses it, my nephew uses it, and I saw the difference that it made in their life. Since drinking AG1 daily, I felt that kind of energy myself, and I know that I'm getting the nutrients I need. I travel a lot. I have a busy, hectic, chock-full schedule, and it's nice to know that that one step will help me make sure that my nutrition goals are met on a daily basis. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I add AG1 to my regimen of multivitamins, in fact, AG1 is so great you could probably replace your vitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes for gut support, vitamin C, and zinc. All the stuff that supports your immune system, all the stuff that keeps you healthy, all the stuff that allows you to run through the day and know that you're going to have the energy that you need. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it's easy. You can get the packet that you keep on the kitchen counter. If you travel as much as I do, you can get the little packs that you can just throw inside your bag. You can keep it in your gym bag if you need to. It's formulated based on the latest science, and it maintains high quality standards. Even my friends and family have started drinking AG1, and they always tell me how energetic they feel when they take this step. You should think about it too. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why I'm excited to welcome them as a new partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/YMK. That's drinkag1.com/YMK. Check it out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. I love to be able to cook in a kitchen and have a good meal with the people I care about all around me. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen and a big island, and we were able to all get in and do our thing together and sit down in the adjoining dining room and have a long, loud meal and then clean up afterwards and continue the conversation. I loved being able to do that, and Airbnb allowed that to happen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. Hosting your home on Airbnb is a great way to make some extra money. It's very practical as a side hustle. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Have you ever owned something that inspired you to try to lift up your game? I know, I just got a new tennis racket. It's one of those newfangled things that's supposed to put a little bit of extra sauce on the ball. And it makes me want to spend a little bit of extra time on the court to perfect my backhand or work on my volleys. Here's the thing. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panoramic glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. Available multi-terrain select. With all of these options, you can travel in style and comfort in the city or off-road. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. So I've actually seen, I don't know why, but in my travels as a journalist, I've actually seen the pamphlet that they give to families when they move. And there's a lot of advice for the spouse that's holding it down, which is usually the woman.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of official advice that they gave the kids as you were moving into these new schools and these new environments?
Not really. I mean, I think that's, thank goodness for my mom.
Get with the program.
Thank goodness for my mother. I mean, my mother was that rock. She stayed home with us and really allowed us to always feel like she could make home anywhere, no matter where we moved to.
So no matter where you moved to, what was dinner on a Tuesday night like?
It could be anything. I mean, it could be, usually it was some form of chicken or steak or empanada, black beans, rice. I would say black beans and rice are very popular in my family. You know, just being Brazilian, but also Puerto Ricans. We love beans and rice as a staple. But typically, my mother always has a way with making something out of nothing. And there's a lot of leftovers that she would make incredibly into a whole new meal the next day or 2 days later. Lasagna is a favorite of hers as well. So my mom's lasagna was pretty famous. In fact, I remember living in Spain and my parents having a lasagna party where everybody came with their best lasagna. And my mom used a store-bought canned sauce and ended up still winning the competition of all the lasagnas. Yes.
Wow.
So her lasagna was pretty darn good.
As someone who is Puerto Rican and Brazilian and American, what was your identity journey like?
People always ask, where are you from? Like, where, what do you consider yourself? And it was always, and it still is a difficult question for me to answer when people ask, you know, where's home? When I was younger, it was interesting. People even asking the question, where were you born? And I remember struggling with that because I was born in Taiwan. And a lot of people were like, where? What? Where were you born? Like, they didn't know where that was. I remember my friends, I mean, young kids, not really understanding and having to explain and why were you born there? That's so weird. So I remember, just to make things easier, telling people, I'm from Los Angeles.
Even before you were from Los Angeles?
So
you were just making it up?
I was making it up. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make life easy. But yeah, I had a hard time with that. And I think it's interesting now that I live here. Now I could say, oh yeah, that's where I'm from. And my kids say that now, even though they were both born and raised in Hoboken, New Jersey for the longest time. So yeah, but now I think we all identify with LA.
You said you had a hard time with it. Is it actually a case where you had a hard time with it, or that was it a case where people had a hard time figuring out what category or what box to put you in? Is she Puerto Rican? Is she Brazilian?
Yeah.
Is she Latina? Is she Asian? Because she was born in
Taiwan. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I had so many job interviews where, because I am trilingual and I speak fluent Portuguese, both my parents speak Portuguese to each other at home to this day. I speak Spanish from living in Spain and my grandparents being in Puerto Rico and all my family in Puerto Rico and many summers there. And I think people would look at me and say, well, you look very European. So, you know, yes, they couldn't put me in a box. I think that's the struggle that a lot of us feel, though, who are, you look at us and we maybe don't look like what you picture a stereotype to look like, which is, I've tried to educate people on this so much. I mean, you know, I was once told by a boss, believe it or not, we need more Morales, less Natalie. And this was, yes.
Yes. Okay, we're on the radio, so you can't see my expression right now, but.
Yeah, disdain, disgust and disdain. I could tell you what that, because exactly, it was inconceivable.
And what were you supposed to do at that point?
Yeah, no, I, you know, there's no trying to be something other than who I am. And it's interesting because I think as journalists, we love to explore identity so much more, I think, because there are a lot of us who see this problem in America where people don't identify with a certain category or check that box. And I think that's been a constant occupation for a lot of us is why? Why do we have to fit into that mold?
Right. A box of fixed certitude. The reason I asked you that question is because you said you struggle with it. And it seems that many times it's not the individual that struggles with it. It's all the people that are around them.
You're right.
That struggle with trying to figure out, where do you fit?
Right. Right.
What are you supposed to be?
And having to explain to people, like, why do I have to explain that to you?
When did you discover a love of cooking? Because I have your cookbook here with me, and people who are listening should grab this. At Home with Natalie, there's a beautiful picture. Do you, you don't actually dress like this when you cook, do you?
No.
Okay. Because, you know, you're looking
bright,
very
yellow
elegant.
Shirt.
And good on you if you do. But
there'd be splatter of oil and grease all over that bright yellow shirt.
But it's clear from the book how much you love cooking and how comfortable you are in the kitchen. Were you always comfortable in the kitchen?
I think that came with just growing up and always helping my mother out in the kitchen. My sisters, as I said, you know, I'm the middle. Every holiday is a family affair of food. And now my whole family lives in Florida. So unfortunately, I don't get to be there for the holiday festivities as much as I used to. But it was always, okay, you're going to make this. You're going to bring the turkey. You're going to bring the sides. You're going to bring the flan. You're going to bring the whatever it was. And everybody contributed. But growing up, it was helping my mother in the kitchen. It was never a solo thing for her. We always pitched in and helped out. And just through osmosis, I was able to pick up on recipes and learn how to make the right flavor combinations. And I never realized that I was actually good at it. I think until I moved into my own apartment in New York City for the first time and started having dinner parties with people and having friends over. And people were like, Natalie's the best cook. Let's go to Natalie's place.
You know? There's something that happens when you do that. When your friends figure out, oh, she can cook. We're just going to hang out at her house all the time.
It was always, you know, oh, we're coming to your place. And she always has more wine. So let's go to Natalie's place. I still, to this day, love to host.
Do you let people in the kitchen with you, or are you one of those people who your kitchen is a no-fly zone?
No, I love when anybody comes in and steps in and wants to help out. That's great. The only thing is when my husband steps into the kitchen, I'm like, okay, you know, he does his thing.
Is he a cook also?
He's not, so I have to sometimes...
Does he get in the way?
Yeah, a little bit, and I have to oversee a little bit too and make sure that he's... doing it my way, which, I mean, as long as he's doing it, it's great. And wanting to step in. I mean, I give him salad duty most nights.
So I'm trying to figure out how you had time to cook, because you worked for Court TV, you worked at NBC for a very long time. You now have a talk show, which requires a lot of your time and attention. Mm-hmm. How did you find time to cook? And your kids are now young adults.
Mm-hmm.
So you were juggling quite a lot. And yet it sounds like you still found time to stand at the stove.
I prefer, actually, I think it's faster to stay home and cook than it is sometimes to have to get dressed up, go out to dinner with the kids, take everybody out. I mean, yes, we'll order in on occasion, but even then, like, it's never
your
as
views good. On takeout?
Takeout in LA, it's not as good. I mean, in New York, takeout was fantastic, but here we struggle with finding good places. I mean, we have like two or three, and that's about it.
Yeah, takeout in New York. Can we just say a word about that? Takeout in New York City. I've never lived in New York City, but I spent a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an art.
It is.
I mean, you order, I don't know if they zip on some zip line straight to your apartment or something like that, but you order and it's like there in a minute. And they figure out the packaging.
Yes. So everything is just as it should be without getting soggy, and it stays warm and... Yes, it's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever done takeout, it's just a different thing.
Right, right.
And everyone else seems to struggle with it.
So for me, the answer is it's easier to be home and it's easier to cook. And actually, our family we're all very healthy people. My kids love to work out. They're boys, you know, they want to be fit and trim. So they want a lot of protein and a lot of clean carbs. So I'm more limited in what I can make them because they want things a certain way now. But, and same thing with my husband, but...
So wait, your kids, they're not asking for Twinkies and Doritos
and... No, I don't have those kids. They don't eat junk food. I know, it's crazy.
Clean carbs.
Yes, they want whole grains and...
Farro?
Couscous and quinoa.
You have those kids,
I have those kids, yeah. I don't know. They're LA kids, I guess. I don't know.
Do the boys' friends want to come to your house, or are they instead, I'm going to go to the house down the street where they have the Doritos?
Oh, no, we still get the pizzas for the boys. Okay. You know, when the friends are coming over, it's like, okay, we're going to eat like them. We're going to get hamburgers and pizzas.
You know, some of us love the food that we grew up on. Mm-hmm. But when we look back at the diet that our families put together,
mm-hmm.
as much as you love it, you think, were they trying to kill me?
Yeah.
What were we eating? It was so good, but it wasn't always good for us.
Right.
Was that true of the food that you grew up on?
I would say Latin food is known to be fried, very salty, but I would say the frying part, a lot of grease. So I actually, in my cookbook, I make a lot of healthy substitutions. And for example, I bake my empanadas. I don't fry them. I have a mac and cheese where I use cauliflower and butternut squash and add less cheese, but it still has a lot of flavor. So I do a lot of things where I have found ways to, again, find good substitutes without sacrificing the flavor. But yeah, Latin food is not healthy at all.
So what tastes like home to you when you think of a recipe that your mom used to make or that you used to enjoy in your mama's kitchen? What comes to mind?
I always think, and it's still my signature dish, and I've taught my son to make it, and my oldest. I'm hoping my youngest will eventually learn to make it too. It's our flan.
Everybody, my sisters,
we all make flan, and it's fantastic. It's such an easy recipe. I've made this so many times, so many variations. I've made mango flan, pumpkin flan for the holidays. It's a super easy recipe.
And you have the variations, coconut flan.
Coconut flan.
In your cookbook. Again, it's called At Home with Natalie. But, you know, if you've only had flan in a restaurant or if you've only had it at someone's house, you say it's easy, but it doesn't read easy. I mean, you might think, how do I get this consistency? How do I get that perfect layer of caramelization on the top and just enough of that little bit of liquid? And what kind of device am I supposed to cook this in? So walk us through this quickly about how easy it actually is and where the trip points are.
Yes. I mean, I would say the most difficult part is the caramelization. And that really is, I think the best tool for that is a double boiler, which is a pan within a pan insert. The bottom pan has just a little bit of water, and then you put the insert inside. Now you can get the same with what they call, we call it baño maría in Spanish or Portuguese also. And that is just a flat, like a pan in the oven filled with a little bit of water, and you can use what is a pie tray, and you can put your flan and caramelize your sugar in that inside the oven at a low temperature. I think it's harder to get that the right way. I think it's harder to get the caramelization just perfect that way. Double boilers are very easy to find on Amazon. I've found mine many times. And my mom gave me one when I got my first apartment in New York, and I still have it. It's the best gift.
The double boiler.
Yeah.
And I love an individual dessert. I mean, I like pie and I like cake and I like other things that are communal that you cut up, but I love like a flan or a creme brulee. It's all yours.
Yes.
You don't have to share it with anybody. Right. It just comes and it's all yours. So small glass.
Little ramekins, small glass dish, or
porcelain.
And you can get that same, again, with the little ramekins. You just put the sugar on the bottom, put it in the oven with a tray of water underneath, and let the caramelization happen first, and then you pour the mixture. It's basically evaporated milk, condensed milk, eggs, vanilla, and that's pretty much it.
When you serve it, how do you garnish it?
This is the best, you know, if you want to really wow your guests, if you're serving this at a dinner party, for example, I always like to leave it in whatever container it's in. And then I do my flip the flan right in front of the guest.
Wait, one more time. You flip my flan.
You ready to flip the flan? And so you take the tray or the plate, the individual plate, depending on how you're serving it. You put it on the top of the ramekin or the flan portion. And then you just hold it tightly and you literally flip, and it should just pop right out with the caramel flowing right on top, perfectly.
Don't be gingerly about it. If you're going to flip it, flip and flop.
You flip and flop it and it'll come right out. It should just pour right out after it's cooled. I mean, it has to cool, and I would say let it be in the refrigerator for about half a day or so just to make sure it's solid.
Anything, berries, mint sprigs, anything on that?
It's so beautiful if you add... Yeah, berries is beautiful on the side, just like a creme brulee, like you would garnish, however you would like to garnish.
I noted that you do have slightly healthier versions. You can use low-fat condensed milk instead.
Yes, that's my trick.
Again, does the consistency change or the flavor?
So.
Does that have an impact on that?
I have not found it changes anything. Now, the flan purists out there may say they disagree, but my mom uses, there is 2% evaporated milk, and there's low-fat sweetened condensed milk, and I've done it that way. I've also used full-fat versions, and I don't think I could tell the difference.
Flan is popular in several cultures. Are there slight variations?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've had it all through Latin and South America. I've had it in Spain. Of course, in Spain, it's very much a delicacy. It's their dessert as well. I would say the flan in Spain is perhaps less custardy and creamy. And I think our flan in Brazil and Puerto Rico has a little bit more of that sweetened condensed milk texture. Yeah. I don't know why. I've never delved into what the ingredients are that make it different, though, in Spain versus, you know, the flan that we make.
I road test all the recipes at home, and I look forward to doing this one. I've never made a flan.
Oh, I would.
I've had creme brulee. I've made creme brulee with a little blowtorch, but I've never made flan.
Well,
so I'm going to be
your
yours will be the first one.
Okay, knock on wood.
Knock on wood.
Goes well.
Okay, and if I don't get the flip right, I'm going to be calling you.
She said she made it sound so easy.
This has been fun. Thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much. It's been amazing.
My best to you.
Thank you so much. And thanks for letting me go down memory lane.
Natalie's story reminds us of how food and cooking are so closely tied to identity. Even though she's had a rather unusual upbringing, globe-trotting around the world, I think we all can relate to feeling more connected to our cultural identities through food. She said something in our conversation that I want to spotlight. When you break bread with people, you're holding hands with them across the table. You're sharing part of your identity with them, or you're learning more about theirs. Even as people around her struggled to put her in a box of their own perceptions, Natalie knew who she was through all of that. If you want to learn how to make Natalie's perfect flan, and I bet you do, you can find it on my Instagram page at Michelle_Norris. That's 2 underscores. And you can also find the recipe at our website, yourmamaskitchen.com. And before we go, a reminder, we want to hear from you. We're opening up our inbox for you to record yourself and tell us about your mama's recipes, some memories from your kitchen growing up, or your thoughts on some of the stories you've heard on this podcast. Make sure to send us a voice memo at ymk@highergroundproductions.com for a chance for your voice and your story to be featured in a future episode. Thanks so much again to Natalie for coming into our studios at Higher Ground and to all of you for joining me today. Make sure to come back again next week because you know us, we're always serving up something special. Until then, stay bountiful. This has been a Higher Ground, an Audible original produced by Higher Ground Studios. Senior producer Natalie Wren, producer Sonia Tun. Additional production support by Misha Jones. Sound design and engineering from Andrew Epen and Ryan Kozlowski. Higher Ground Audio's editorial assistant is Camilla Thurdikus. Executive producers for Higher Ground are Nick White, Mukta Mohan, Dan Fearman, and me, Michelle Norris. Executive producers for Audible are Nick D'Angelo and Ann Hepperman. The show's closing song is 504 by the Soul Rebels. Editorial and web support from Melissa Baer and Say What Media. Talent booker Angela Peluso. Chief Content Officer Rachel Giazza. And that's it. Goodbye, everybody. Copyright 2024 by Higher Ground Audio, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2024 by Higher Ground Audio, LLC.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to try to lift up your game? I know I just got a new tennis racket. It's one of those newfangled things that's supposed to put a little bit of extra sauce on the ball. And it makes me want to spend a little bit of extra time on the court to perfect my backhand or work on my volleys. Here's the thing. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panoramic glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. Available multi-terrain select. With all of these options, you can travel in style and comfort in the city or off-road. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.